Hi, I'm Nave.
Hi, I'm Martin.
And we're Asteroids in Exile. Awesome. So, welcome to our new introduction, Martin. Good work.
Yeah, thank you. Welcome, everybody. Everything worked out perfectly this time. It's a Christmas miracle.
That was our first attempt at trying to do a live introduction, so we don't have to go back and redo the whole thing. So, we're learning. So, what are we going to talk about today, Martin?
We shall start out with movie news.
Yeah.
Starting with The Arrival.
And then moving on to Fantastic Beasts and Moana, which only one of us have seen, right?
As The Arrival.
Oh, you haven't seen The Arrival either?
No, I just read the short story.
All right, okay. Cool, so we'll just have a quick discussion about those then. And we also had some movie trailers. So Guardians of the Galaxy 2, which just came out yesterday. It came out like 2 hours early compared to the scheduled time, I believe. And then going back, just some quick thoughts on the Logan, Lego Batman, and Ghost in the Shell trailers as well.
And then we're going to talk about some sci-fi movies that are up in the immediate future. Blade Runner 2. Called Blade Runner 20-something, I think.
2049.
2049, Blade Runner, thank you. Yeah. And the film version of Valerian and the City of the Thousand Planets.
Yeah, that should be cool. And then a small sci-fi movie that's coming out, which I don't know if people have heard about it, called Star Wars, Rogue One. So that is, we're in Star Wars month now, in December. So just a quick rundown of expectations around that. And then if we have time, I guess Arkham VR, right? All right, so we'll start at the top. Movies. You haven't seen any of these movies except Fantastic Beasts.
Right? No, but please indulge me about The Arrival.
What have you heard about The Arrival?
Mainly good things. A very emotional story core. So a very grounded story. It's not that grounded in sci-fi, but rather the human experience and how it can be changed by language.
Yeah.
Should we go?
Yeah.
Should we spoil it from the beginning, or should we stay as vague as possible?
I think at this stage, because it's still relatively new, it's like it's still in cinemas, let's not spoil it.
Okay. Right?
So we'll do a non spoiler discussion of The Arrival. As a movie going experience, it's really fun. It's not like a sci-fi extravaganza of explosions and space battles and that sort of thing. It's very heady, you know, like it's a bit intellectual. It's very good. It's a very well put together movie. I thought the pacing was quite good. It kept the mystery about what's going on going. And there's a puzzle that you need to solve as well as an audience member when you watch this movie. And I think they did a very good job at sort of putting all of that together, because it does really mess with your perception of what's going on. But it's not a feel-good movie in a general sense. Like, if you want to watch a movie where the humans kick alien butt, go watch Independence Day, because it's not this kind of movie.
Yeah, and that's very refreshing. Also, the short story plays with the perception of the reader.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, everything comes together, well, rather perfectly.
Well, perfectly is an operative word, because the problem that I have with The Arrival is... whenever you play with time, you end up digging yourself a hole that's hard to come out of. And like any sort of story that plays around with timelines and, you know, the past versus the future and things like that, you tend to have these issues around causality. And if you think about it too hard, like on the surface, it makes sense and it's fine and everything's nice. But if you think about it too hard, yeah, it starts to break down. And so I thought, you know, the Arrival does suffer from that. But again, so does every other movie that plays with time. So I don't really have a problem with that at that level.
The only thing the short story suffers from is a rather philosophical discussion about free will.
Right.
But I would go straight into spoiler territory to discuss this.
Yeah, and that's a really good sort of discussion that the movie does prompt is... it's the whole Sarah Connor question, you know?
Yeah.
Are things predetermined, or do we have a say in our fate? Because the movie tends to go the opposite of Sarah Connor, and says effectively that everything's predetermined. So, I mean, you can make up your own mind about that as you go through it, but that's why a lot of people didn't like it as well. So the whole thing around predestiny, effectively, and your lack of choice in what may or may not happen is a question that the movie raises. So it's not a part of the plot itself, but it's something that is a result of the plot. So it's an interesting one. I mean, I recommend people to go watch it because it's a brilliant movie and it's very well made. It's just not a feel-good movie, so that's one thing to be aware of. And yeah, it's great for like to watch before dinner with friends. Then you can discuss the movie after at dinner, you know. So because there's a lot to talk about afterwards.
A heavy dinner.
It'll be a heavy philosophical debate over dinner. Yeah, if that's what you're into, it's the movie for you. All right. So what about Fantastic Beasts? I've not seen this one. I'm expecting that one to be a much happier movie. So what did you think?
It is a much happier movie. And I must say, it managed to do something that the Harry Potter movies couldn't accomplish in bewitching me.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
You were bewitched?
Because I thought I will have a hard time at the cinema watching this. But then my wife suffered through Doctor Strange with me. So it's only fair. Affair that I suffer through another magical themed movie for her, because it to a certain degree doesn't suffer from the problem that the Harry Potter movies had, and those were the predetermined antagonists. You know, Voldemort right. have had to happen, and it was always his machinations were always such a pair of shackles on the mm-hmm. whole franchise. I think, and yeah. Well, this movie felt airy, free from all those shackles. It puts on shackles at the end.
Right.
But
well, it needs to have its own shackles, I guess. But it's good that the whole thing wasn't tied to just one character and one bad guy.
Yeah. Yeah, it is tied to one bad guy at the end. Yeah. But I mean, if you can put one and one together, you can pretty much see how the movie will turn out at the beginning with the bad guy, because
it gets
communicated obvious? in the cinematography, and there are a lot of clues sprinkled
right.
throughout the movie, and then you see the bad guy, and the biggest problem I had in this movie is the reveal of the bad guy and the actor who plays him.
Right. I actually don't know anything about him. So I don't know who the bad guy is, and I don't know who plays him. So I mean, I'm not a Harry Potter fan. So I'm not, I think I've only watched two Harry Potter movies randomly. Like, I don't even know if it's in the right order. And I read half a book. So I'm not coming from a place of like knowing much about what's going on with the Harry Potter series. Is that something you would recommend to someone like me? Like, is it worth seeing as a non-Harry Potter fan?
I don't think so, because the movie doesn't assume that you're well versed in the universe or in the mm-hmm. in the goings on of the universe, and if you don't know anything about it, I feel like it doesn't leave you stranded and requires you to find out things on your own, because it's
right.
The focus lies on magic, but it's not like the instructional magic that we see in Harry Potter, where he has to right. learn things to have the story progress, but people just do things.
Right. Here, it's like any other superhero thing where, like, you just take for granted that these crazy yeah. things can be done.
They can do it. No, it was an amazing movie. I was really surprised by how much I liked it. Still like
it. Was it a spectacle?
Yeah, to a certain degree. It didn't feel right. that blockbustery. Of course, right. things get damaged, buildings get damaged and stuff, but it didn't feel like things happen for the sake of the spectacle, so to say, but sure. were put
it's
in
very
there.
British then.
Yeah, it was very British, yeah, because the scene when we first get to see what's going on inside the suitcase is amazing. When you see that I guess it's not a spoiler, but he carries a whole zoo around in the.
Well, yeah, I mean, because that was the point, right? He's transporting all these things inside the suitcase across U.S. customs, and he didn't declare. I mean, effectively, that's how I interpreted this whole thing.
Yeah.
It's effectively a customs violation when you pass the border. Which one? And maybe it's a loaded question, just because obviously, you know, you've got bias from one to the other. But as a movie about magic, which one did you enjoy more, Doctor Strange or Fantastic Beasts?
Fantastic Beasts, because they could teleport on their own. They didn't need.
Oh, right.
Sling rings to do the transporting.
Yeah, the sling rings were a bit stupid, but yes. All right, cool. So they can transport by themselves. They can teleport by themselves.
Teleport by themselves, yeah.
They don't need sling rings. I like it. All right. all right, so maybe I will check it out. I mean, it's still in theaters, so I'm interested. And I've heard as well that you don't have to be a massive Harry Potter fan and know much about the Harry Potter universe to be able to watch it, so I might give it a go.
Yeah,
cool. Well, the other movie that I watched in this last couple of weeks was Moana, so the Disney princess movie. From an animation point of view, that was fantastic. I mean, the CGI computer animation was really good. Even the water, I mean, you can just tell how far we've come with animation by how good the water looks.
Yeah.
And yeah, it just looks really cool. The story overall was very it's what you'd expect. It hit all the beats from a normal Disney princess movie. The only difference that I sort of liked was that, you know, there wasn't like Moana didn't have to get the prince at the end. There wasn't a forced love story, which I think is getting popular now with the Disney animated movies. Like even Frozen didn't have like that forced love story. Well, I think Frozen did have a forced love story. I can't remember now. But this one was like, because, you know, it's Moana as a princess with Dwayne Johnson as Maui, the demigod, the mischievous demigod. And he's like an immortal. And that's your two main characters for this whole movie, effectively. And I'm thinking to myself, if they end up like kissing at the end of this, it's going to be just really weird, because it would have gone to a really weird place. Because she's like, I don't know, a 12-year-old princess. And he's like a, you know, 100-something-thousand-year-old demigod. So they didn't take it there, which I was very happy about.
Very good.
Because that was the one piece of anxiety I had with the movie through the whole thing. Because, yeah, she just did what she needed to do, got her quest done, and, you know, didn't have to say, oh, now I need to fall in love with someone at the end of it. So that was really cool. Yeah, I mean, aside from the animation and the fact that it's a by-the-numbers Disney princess movie, it's worth watching, I think.
How is Dwayne Johnson's performance? Is it rock solid?
It's rock solid. he brings so much of energy and fun to the role. It's a little bit over the top. It's a little bit, you know, like it's a little bit cheesy. Some of the jokes are just cheesy. Some jokes work, some jokes don't, but at least they take the risks sometimes. The thing that I really wanted to have seen more of is more of the Pacific Islander culture. It felt a little bit watered down and kind of like you know, like when you eat like New York style Chinese food, you know, like it's all bland and all the spice has been removed. And this sort of take on Pacific Islander culture kind of felt like that to me. Like it was just kind of like there on the surface, but you really didn't get any sort of real feeling of like the culture and the values and where they were coming from. I mean, obviously there was a big thing around like family, and there was a big thing around, you know, loyalty to the village, but that's like in every Disney animated movie, you know, they always have the village song and, you know, why you shouldn't go outside of our village borders and that sort of thing. But it felt very generic in that way. What I wanted was more of a Pacific Islander type of like flavor to the whole thing. And you got some parts of it. Like there were some parts where like Maui does like the war dance and stuff like that. But it's like the last 2 seconds on screen and it doesn't really register. Like why is he dancing in the middle of a battle? You know, it's like I would have liked more kind of ceremony around those sorts of things to like really draw attention to it and really make it stand out, because otherwise it just kind of exists in the background. And if you don't know what's going on, you'll either miss it or think, oh, that's a rather strange thing to do at this point in time. But that's really my only gripe. I mean, from an animation point of view, which is the main reason I went to see it, was pretty cool movie.
That's amazing to hear. I want to watch it with the nieces at some point.
Yeah, I think if you take the nieces, they'll definitely enjoy it. Amazing. And it's cool seeing there was a lot of press made around just the look of the characters. You know, like, I think there was some backlash against the design of Maui. So Dwayne Johnson's character being this, you know, looking like an obese or overweight person compared to the stereotype of what is beautiful or what a man should look like or what the hero should look like, kind of thing. But I think it's good to see some diversity of those characters.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it worked. I think in the design of the way the whole, like, if you look at, if you look at Moana in the context of just Moana, because it's just that island effectively, like it's just that that world, it works. If you judge it based on the notions of our world, then yeah, you can draw those sorts of parallels. But I think from a design point of view, if you just look at it in that world by itself, it works. Okay, so I didn't take any measure of offense from that. But I think the diversity of the characters, the type of princess, or, you know, she's not really a princess, I guess. She's a chief's daughter, so she's kind of a princess. Yeah, but just seeing that on screen is good for kids, you know, like just seeing the diversity and differences. And then having a fun swashbuckling adventure is also fun. So cool. So that's my take on one. And I felt like I really overdrew on that discussion.
But I didn't hear anything about the uproar against the physique of Dwayne Johnson's character.
You did.
You know, I used to know a guy who trained special forces and stuff, who has a very unhealthy girth, but he could still move like a panther, because I've seen him perform in a martial arts tournament, and he just wrecked those guys.
Wow. Yeah.
So
it's an interesting one. I mean, it comes down to obviously a lot of the diversity with the way people look, right? They had to draw a fine line between stereotype and, I guess, what makes sense and what will look powerful and what will look strong compared to what's just going to be a stereotype of like a fat, overweight person, right? Yeah. And Pacific Islanders, I mean, are larger people in the sense of, you know, they're taller, they're bigger. Like my people are small people, so yeah. I'm generally shorter than average. But on the average, you know, then they had to sort of say, well, if it's a Pacific Islander type body type, what does that look like? So what does strong, what does powerful look like in that sort of culture and body type, and then be able to design a character around that? And I think what they ended up doing actually, to me, like I said, worked. But when you judge it compared to the other characters that they've designed in other movies, who are, well, I guess, more European, and that's a different type of take on, you know, what those characters look like, then you start to get into that territory where it might seem like, hey, why does this guy look big and fat and the other guy looks like, you know, strong and strapping?
Yeah.
And, I mean, there's always going to be someone complaining about something, right? So
yeah.
I don't think this was like, yeah, I think the level of discussion around it was actually much more than it needed, I think.
Yeah.
Including the discussion we're having right now.
Yeah, that's our discussion.
I don't know. That's our discussion. All right. So that's pretty much the movies that we had on our plate for the movies part of the discussion. Did you have anything else that you just thought of?
I wanted to watch Shin Godzilla, the latest Japanese input into the Godzilla franchise, but I wasn't able to acquire the means to watch it because it's not officially in cinemas or anything in Austria, and I hoped I get the chance to watch a Japanese version of it. I'm really interested in that movie because I've seen some screen caps on Tumblr, and it really reminds me of the whole tsunami incident and stuff, because I've when that happened, I've seen live footage on TV, and to this day it's still haunting me.
The
Fukushima incident and everything, when just the water comes into the country and just takes everything with it and just pushes everything in its way. Just a horrible imagery, and combined with the Godzilla imagery, it stirs up something in me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really excited to see this movie. Not that I enjoy catastrophic imagery.
Not that I enjoy catastrophic destruction of coastlines.
Of course, yeah. But I've heard the emphasis of the movie is on the politics reacting to the destruction and what they should do next. Will they evacuate the people? Will they take military measures? What's the line? So, how does the international community react to such level of destruction?
So it's like the government's reaction to the to the incident kind of thing, right? Is that live action or is it animated?
It's a live action thing, but they don't have people in rubber suits.
They've got CGI monsters.
And Japanese CGI is always frisky business, so to say.
Yeah.
It either looks great or it looks like shit.
It looks like something out of the Power Rangers.
Yeah. But then, you know, if bad effects are done in a charming way, they're okay.
Then it works. Yeah.
On a movie budget, you can do much, much more.
Yeah. And what's it called again?
It's called Shin Godzilla, but US audiences should know it by Godzilla Resurgence.
Godzilla Resurgence or Shin Godzilla.
Yes, and Shin Godzilla means new Godzilla.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I think I saw a trailer for that and it did look quite cool because that's why I wanted to see whether it was animated or live action, because I saw a trailer which was live action and it looked pretty good. Like even from an effects point of view, it looked pretty good. So I'd be interested to see that too. The other movie that I just thought of, I guess related to that a little bit, was there's a lot of buzz currently around an animated movie called Your Name. So that's the English translation.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what the Japanese is. I don't know too much about it, but everyone who's seen it and talks about it tends to rave about it. It's also a thing that's kind of like across time, I believe.
Yeah.
There's a lot of parallels. It talks about, it's effectively a love story between these two characters, but they're connected via some strange sci-fi style means. I'm not sure what the actual connection is. One is in the city, one is in the country, and it asks a lot of questions about identity and the contrasts between people and, you know, where you live, how you live, and the things that make us different and the things that make us the same. I mean, it sounds really interesting, so I want to see it. But I think the English version is not currently in cinemas yet, or it's still being made, I think.
I think so too. I only know of it because there's an Austrian film blog. And one of the guys was in Japan recently and he watched all the movies, and this one was amongst them, and he raved about it.
Yeah. Like it's supposed to be quite unique in what it's trying to say and like how it's saying it. They're saying that the director of this movie, and I can't remember his name, but is effectively like the next Miyazaki. And I think the studio that acquired the English rights to it are trying to position it for best animated feature for the Oscars this next Oscars at the next Academy Awards. So they want to be able to sort of put that English dub together so that they can release it in time for being able to be nominated because, you know, it's that good apparently. So
it's not that.
Yeah, I'm definitely interested. No, I mean, they've only got, because the Oscars is in February. So I don't know how they're going to plan to do that, but we'll see. And apparently, it's a massive movie in Japan. So definitely one to keep on the radar, I think. Cool. And speaking of, just going back to the Godzilla one, the other one that I wanted to mention was a movie called Eye in the Sky. Have you heard of this one? So going back to what you were talking about, the Godzilla one, which kind of like looks at more the government's reaction and how they manage the incident of what's happening. Eye in the Sky it's about drone warfare. It's a joint operation between the British and American militaries where, using drones, they see an impending terrorist attack, or they see the planning for a terrorist attack, and they have the option, using the drone, to fire a missile and take out the suicide bomber, right? But in doing so, they're going to put civilians at risk. And so the movie is really about the discussion between the two militaries and the people involved. So there's the actual drone pilot, there's the various levels of the military and the politicians, for how they make that decision about whether or not they should fire the missile now and risk a small number of civilians, or not fire the missile and let the suicide bombers take out potentially a lot more civilians. So it's that moral puzzle, you know, where there's a train that's gone wild on the tracks and it's heading towards six people, and it will kill them if it reaches them. But you have the option to flick the tracks and divert the train to another track where it will only kill one person. And so that's the moral puzzle, right? So yeah, do you do the switch or not? You know, is one person's life worth less than six people's lives? And there's also an argument to be made, well, those six people are in the line anyway, so they're like, it's their destiny compared to this other person. Who it's not, you know, so it's the movie goes through kind of those sorts of iterations and discussions. And it's very well put together. It stars Helen Mirren and Alan Rickman, who you may remember as Severus Snape, even though I didn't watch Harry Potter. And it's got the dude from Breaking Bad as well, Aaron something or other, I forgot his last name.
The drug cook, co-cook, yeah.
The co-cook. So the cast is pretty good. The movie really, it really just stays in like four or five locations because, you know, just like the offices where these different people are based at and flicks between them for the conversations. But it's put together really well and really, really enjoyable. Really, it's just you go through those motions too, those motions and emotions around what to do, you know. So it's really cool. Worth checking out. So that's called Eye in the Sky. I saw it's on Amazon Prime Video. So it's
already streaming.
Yeah.
Okay, I have to check that out.
Cool. So, all right, shall we go into trailers then?
Let's go into trailers.
All right, so Guardians of the Galaxy 2 just dropped yesterday. What did you think?
It's amazing that they stepped up the music game, and because I wouldn't have thought that I ever heard The Suite in a trailer for a movie in 2016. that's nice to see. And yeah, I guess Baby Groot will be the next big thing. It looks fun, but it looks like more of the same. You don't get the New York style Asian food, but you get the good Asian food again, and you enjoy it. But you're asking yourself, isn't there, will there be more, or another thing that is exciting?
Yeah. So I mean, so it sounds like on a scale of 1 to 10, where 10's the highest, you're kind of at a 6 or a 5.
Yeah,
you're
kind of like, on a 6.
It could go either way.
Yeah.
6, just above meh.
It will be a good movie, no doubt. But, you know, coming to superhero movies, I tend to be rather, I want to see the whole thing before
your expectations are high. Yeah.
Yeah.
Your expectations are high and you don't want to judge from the trailer, I guess.
Yeah.
For me, I think I'm around maybe a 7. The trailer was good. I'm really excited over Baby Groot, first of all, because he looks good. But my worry is that they're just going to overuse Baby Groot. I mean, even in the trailer, I thought it was a little bit too much Baby Groot.
Yeah.
I thought they kind of overdid it a little bit. Like if they just did the first bit where he's like, press the button or don't press the button, like that would have been good.
Yep.
But then they kind of took it. You know, they just carried on with that joke. And by the end, I was like, it's kind of over now. But Baby Groot does look awesome, you know? So I think they need to make sure I would hope that they manage how much of Baby Groot they put in, because that cuteness and the cute jokes can only go so far.
Yeah, kind of will take the whole thing.
Yeah, so I hope it's not there strung out through the whole movie. The other thing was, from a production point of view, it just looks like, I think I heard somewhere that they're using different cameras and different equipment now to actually do the filming for the movie.
Yeah.
So they've actually moved away because there was a YouTube video that I watched talking about just the color saturation in all the Marvel movies and how they're all desaturated.
Yeah.
And they have that kind of bland grayness about them. Like as superhero movies, you want them to be more bright and colorful, and compared to the DC movies, they are. But at the same time, they're very desaturated. Whereas this one looks like after they've sort of started using some new equipment and they've sort of lost that color profile that they were using in all the other movies, it looks a lot more richer. It looks a lot more like the blacks seem darker and the colors seem more intense. And so that's exciting me because I want to be able to see, like, especially space and all of the crazy colorful characters in the Guardians of the Galaxy movies in like a very rich sort of way, like, you know, not desaturated where everything's bland and gray, to fit in with all the other movies. Does that make sense? So that's,
yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
From the trailer, it looks like it's going to be a lot more bright and colorful to enjoy, which is, since that's sort of been brought to my attention, I've rewatched Civil War, and I watched it with the contrast and the saturation put up a little bit.
Yeah.
And it does feel a whole lot better.
Really?
Maybe it's just me, right? But watching it, like, especially the battle scenes where the characters are fighting each other, Iron Man's suit, like the red and the yellow, really like punch out compared to the blue and red of Captain America. Black Panther, the suit that doesn't look like just like it looks a little bit flat. But when you pump up the contrast, it seems a lot more real. Like, I don't know, like it's worth doing, I think. So just do some of your own color remixing with the contrast and the saturation on your TV or whatever. And watch a couple scenes from Civil War and you can see what that difference looks like. It's a lot more, to me, visceral, especially now that, you know, when you play video games and stuff on the PlayStation or the game profile on the TV does that automatically. And I think being able to do it on the movies as well really makes a difference.
Yeah, I have to try that out. I haven't heard about the color saturation in the Marvel movies.
Yeah. So apparently, yeah, from a executive point of view, I don't know whether it's Kevin Feige, but all of the movies generally use the same camera equipment and they use the same color profiles when they do the color grading.
Yeah.
And that's why all the movies kind of, that's how they all kind of fit together. But it's also makes them all kind of bland and desaturated because that's a part of the color grading that they do. Whereas if you then pump up the colors, it looks more like the comics because the comics kind of, you know, they're all super colorful. You know, there's a lot of use of primary colors. And when they, as you know, when they use inks, it's black ink, right? So you get that black ink separation as well as the bright colors, and that's what makes the comic reading experience so good. Whereas with the Marvel movies, it's like they don't really use inks because everything's kind of gray or shades of gray, so it's like they've only ever got the pencils, and then the colors are also toned down. So by toning both those things up, it does make a bit of a difference to me. So check it out. Let me know what you think.
Yeah, I have to do that. I haven't heard about those news.
Yeah. I'll find the YouTube link that I was talking about because they also talk about, I think in the, and I can't remember, it may have been Nerdwriter 1, I'm not sure, but they talk about in the 90s, the Salvador La Roca art.
Yeah.
At one stage, they skipped over inks and they just did all the art with just pencils and muted colors. And that's effectively what the Marvel movies are doing. But those series of books didn't have the punch and like the iconic comic stylings that we're used to and that we love, right? Because they were all kind of washed out. So it looked like kind of like comics done in watercolors. So anyway, I mean, we'll put the link in the description below, and you can have a watch of that too. Cool. So, Guardians of the Galaxy 2. I mean, we're still going to watch it, obviously, but
of course.
Let's just hope that they cannot ruin our expectations. I don't think so.
We'll definitely be entertained.
Yeah.
But, you know, judging by the trailer.
I just randomly kind of related to that. The Lego movie was on. So I know we can go to Lego Batman. But the Lego movie was on TV the other day. And it's such a good movie. I recommend if you haven't watched it to watch it.
Yeah.
And Chris Pratt, I think, he's becoming like one of my favorite actors right now because his performance just as a voice in the Lego movie and also as like Star-Lord and in Jurassic Park, I think, you know, it's just fun and yet got that that strongman adventure cowboy type attitude as well. It's such a good mix. So I'm really enjoying Chris Pratt at the moment.
He would be a good Indiana Jones, I think.
He could be, but I think he needs to watch out as well just to not get oversaturated because he's already in so many franchises, right?
Yeah.
I mean, because once he starts becoming too many things, he effectively turns into Tom Cruise. It's like, well, who is he? He's no one. He's just Chris Pratt. He is himself. It's like Matt Damon playing himself in every movie, you know? Did you hear that theory? I heard this theory and I thought it was awesome. Not so much a theory, but it was just a thing. It was a joke someone made. But I thought it was awesome. Is that Matt Damon is actually playing Matt Damon in every movie that he's in.
Yeah.
And it'd be cool if as he goes through different movies, is he has the skills of all the other characters that he's played. So he's Will Hunting and he's Jason Bourne. So when he shows up in The Great Wall, yep, he's got like, he's a mathematical genius who can fight like CIA trained assassin. And so he just has to like, wherever he goes, he's got the memories of all the previous characters that he has.
That would be amazing.
I think that would be so cool. So anyway,
I've heard a theory that the big twist in The Great Wall is that the Chinese try to keep Matt Damon out and he just suddenly appears on the wall and asks, hey, what's up, guys? What are you doing here?
That's going to be, I mean, from a visual point of view, that's going to be an interesting movie. So
I'm
looking forward to it from a visual point of view. I just want to see how they do it. But I don't know. I don't have any high expectations for it.
Yeah, me too. It's such a dumb concept. The Westerner that fortifies the Great Wall with China.
Yeah. So it begs an interesting question though, because we're reaching into interesting movie territory these days, right? So China is now the second biggest movie going market, and they will soon be the biggest, I guess. You know, they're still growing in terms of the spend that they have on movies. So what we're seeing and what The Great Wall is, right, is it's a co-production between Chinese movie studios and Western movie studios.
Yeah.
So China can only release, like, I think in general, the government only approves 24 movies a year. So foreign movies to be released inside China. And so one of the ways that Hollywood tries to get around that is by making it a co-production with a Chinese company so that it's not a foreign movie. It's a local production and then they can show it in China. So we're getting into the situation where we're going to see a lot more of these types of movies, which are kind of like where you've got Western people like Matt Damon and Liam Neeson or whoever else it might be in movies set in China or Chinese-based stories, just because that's where the industry is going. But on the flip side of that, when you look at movies like The Last Samurai and I think even Dances with Wolves, where you've got that white savior type storyline, they have to try to not make it that, because that gets a lot of backlash. And I think that's why this movie's getting a whole lot of backlash, because it feels like you said, it's Matt Damon showing up after thousands of years of China defending itself. He shows up to kind of stop the problem for them, and it ends up being a white savior story. So I think, you know, there's an economic and business reason why these types of stories will get told more often. But what, from a creative and a writing standpoint, they need to do is actually work out how do we tell these stories without making it look like a white savior type storyline, right? And how do we do that? Because I think Hollywood has a very bad track record with creativity in that field.
Perhaps the movie will sweep us off your feet because there's some kind of twist in it.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I mean, it looks pretty straightforward, but yeah, hopefully. Yeah. You know, who knows? But it's got, you know, it's got a very good Chinese cast as well as Matt Damon representing the Western cast. And I'm sure, I mean, there's another Western actor in there, but I don't know. I can't remember who it is. But so, I mean, we just have to watch and see, I guess.
Yeah.
Speaking of high expectations, what do you think of Logan?
I don't know.
Seriously?
Yeah. You know, the trailer looks good, but also the trailer for The Wolverine. How was the second movie called? I think it was just called The Wolverine.
Yeah.
Yeah. The trailer looked also good and promising, but the movie couldn't live up to the promises made.
That was the one set in Japan.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm afraid that Logan will
similarly disappoint.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the trailer looks spectacular. Again, going back to, like, I've got a sensitivity to color saturation and color grading now.
Yeah. And it looks odd. Know?
Yeah. I mean, it looks like it's got very similar color grading to Mad Max. You know, it's got that desert Western kind of styling. It's the red and orange earth. It's got the sunsets. The sky is kind of that sunset skyline, you know, like it's that sunset color. I think it looks really good. The design of it, even inside the dome that he's set up you know, whatever hospital or whatever it is, because they go into a dome and then there's like there's bullet holes all over the dome and it looks like stars. There is some great visual design in the movie, which is making me excited. Even the way they used the Johnny Cash song "Hurt," I think, you know, the tone, what they're the way they've designed it, it looks so cool. There is the worry that it will be disappointing, like you said, because it's easier to make a good trailer than it is to make a good movie, right? And so, yeah, I mean, you got to wait and see, but I'm super excited to see how they pull this one off.
Yeah, I hope it gets good, because the actor who portrays Wolverine, Hugh Jackman, thank you, mm-hmm. he deserves a good solo movie, finally, I think, because he put so much work into that character.
Oh, yeah.
He defined the character for so many people, and I think it's finally time that he gets his swan song.
Yeah, I mean, Hugh Jackman, I think, has just been done an exemplary job, I think, in one, portraying the character, but I think also just kind of respect for the character. So success of the movies aside and quality of the movies aside, I think, he's played Wolverine now, someone, I think I heard somewhere, for like 17 years or something.
Yeah, right? Really.
So we've had three Spider-Mans in that time when Wolverine has been played by Hugh Jackman. You know, the X-Men has been rebooted and he stayed the same. So not only has he defined Wolverine, but he's defined the X-Men series. So like the X-Men series as a whole, I mean, there's only maybe him, that's a standout character, Mystique, even though Mystique has been played by two people now. Yeah. And then even Xavier has been played by two people. So he's the most iconic person out of that whole franchise, right? And he's put, you know, I think when he came into it, he really didn't know what he was getting into, but he really committed to the role, I think, and to the seriousness that the fans take the character as well. So I think he's really tried. I give him a lot of props for that. And, you know, he's really put a lot of effort into trying to make it better, I think. So I also believe, you know, he deserves, and this needs to be a swan song, because going out on a good note is the way he needs to go out. Because I think, you know, I'm just really happy. I actually wasn't a Wolverine fan when the first X-Men movies came out. I think Gambit and Cyclops were more interesting to me as characters.
Yeah, that is never Wolverine,
Wasn't really a big Wolverine fan. And I was reading X-Men comics for like, you know, most of the 90s, you know? So I'm like an old school X-Men fan. But when I watched the movie and when I saw Hugh Jackman in that role, it's like I got Wolverine. And that was even with the first X-Men movie, which was like from 2000 or something. So it wasn't even the best movie. But Hugh Jackman just fooled and made Wolverine real, that I actually became a Wolverine fan because of him. So That was quite interesting to me, to sort of like understand my relationship with the characters. But also, yeah, you know, there's a special place in my heart for Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. So it'll be interesting. I'm looking forward to Logan and just to see sort of where he can take it and how they end the story for him as well.
And how it connects to the overall X-Men movies, because Patrick Stewart is in it as well.
Yeah, because it's set in the very future, right? Like it's set... I mean, obviously, it looks like an apocalyptic future. I don't know how it's going to connect. I don't know who is still alive, but obviously, Professor Xavier is still there. And it almost looks like an alternate timeline in itself. So it's going to be really interesting to see how it connects. All right. So what about Lego Batman?
That could be fun.
It looks good.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how much of, compared to the Lego movie, I don't know how much of heart it's got, because that's the one thing I think that set the Lego movie apart, is it had that ending was just really cool.
Yes.
The emotional landing of the Lego movie was just phenomenal. And I, even watching it, because I caught the end of it when it was on TV again, it still works. Like, it's just done really well. I don't know if Lego Batman is going to go to that level, or there's just going to be a fun Lego romp, you know, because the trailers make it look like a fun romp. So if that's all it is, I think it'll be fine. But
I think that the twist will be, you know, the emotional depth, because to a certain degree, it's about Batman opening up to others.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps they utilize that to give it more depth.
Yeah, true. I mean, that could very well be his, I mean, because that's what the trailers talk about as well, right? Is his relationship with Robin, and also that he needs to tone it down a little bit. So it'll be interesting to see whether, as Bruce Wayne's character, they can use a Lego movie to humanize Bruce Wayne's character a bit more compared to Ben Affleck as Batman. So I don't know. So, I mean, it's exciting, but we'll just have to see whether it's worth a longer discussion or not, which is the brings us to the last trailer on our list here, which is Ghost in the Shell.
Will you start with this one?
Let me start. So yeah. Visually, super exciting. It looks great. I last saw the Ghost in the Shell animated movie probably, I don't know, 10 years ago. So I need to go back and rewatch that. I also didn't watch the animated series, Standalone Complex. Did you watch those ones?
No, I haven't watched it as well.
Okay, because the movie apparently is going to take on, I think, a lot of the story from the Standalone Complex TV series.
Okay.
And it follows the main bad guy or villain from that show. But they're obviously going to mix in some of the movie as well. So it'll be quite interesting. I think the movie looks very close to what I remember of the anime. And so it'll be good to see how they sort of pull that off and keep the visual styling very close to the animated movies or the animated show. And it just looks so different to what we've seen coming out of a lot of science fiction lately that, you know, it's going to be fresh. So hopefully it translates across the audiences too, because the challenge with things like this is it just going to be too far for Western audiences? And, you know, in terms of like from a box office and a critical point of view, is it going to just be something that gets relegated to a niche market, or is it going to be a mainstream success? And that's kind of what I'm looking out for now, because I would love for it to do well. I mean, I'd love for Scarlett Johansson to be like, see, you know, when do I get my Black Widow movie? So, that's like part of what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
So I think Scarlett Johansson just done an awesome job with those movies, and even like with Lucy and things like that. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how she does as kind of a android or cybernetic enhanced person here. I think that there's going to be a lot of craziness in this movie that I'm waiting for.
I'm not really excited, because I feel like the act of trying to pull the anime into a live action setting feels kind of futile. Don't you think it loses, because animated it still has some dreamlike quality. It feels much more creative than seeing a CGI environment or a built stage and all the heavy makeup and stuff, which is still an accomplishment in itself, no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. It feels like progress in the lack of creativity that we're experiencing.
Right. Yeah. Is that in terms of like ideas for movies and stories, or lack of creativity in the production?
No, rather in ideas for new stories.
Oh yeah.
I don't know. I think if they could have taken the story and made essentially the same story but with new characters, perhaps even in a new setting or in a similar setting,
use the same world,
yeah,
but tell a different story
or that way. It just feels like a creative sellout, because I've only watched the two Ghost in the Shell movies. Those were brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
The second not so much, but I still like it a lot. I don't know. It feels like a futile exercise. I'm not really that excited for the movie, but perhaps it will do something groundbreaking and new that they just didn't show off.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
So is your concern or your gripe, I guess, with animation versus live action?
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's two things there. One is animation versus live action, and the other one is just tell me a new story.
Yeah. Show me something fresh. And then, you know, it already worked as an animated story. It's like the same thing with the Cowboy Bebop live action thing that seems mm-hmm. to be buried right now. But I don't feel the need of a live action version of that story. I don't know.
Right.
And yeah, the same with Ghost in the Shell.
For me, I love animation, but it's weird. I also love, I think we've reached a part or a time now where the CGI and what they can do digitally in a live action movie is at the same level as the amount of freedom they have with animation, where you can effectively make anything happen. So the two mediums obviously have different strengths and weaknesses, but translating an animated movie into a live action movie, I think, is a lot easier now compared to before. I mean, duh.
Yeah.
Right? Because what they can do with digital effects these days is just, they can pretty much do anything now with digital effects. And you saw that with, shows like Doctor Strange and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
So I think I'm excited to see how they translated the kind of 2D animated Ghost in the Shell into a more 3D animated live action movie. That's going to be cool. And as well as adding like the extra dimension, I think it's also a time or a chance to sort of translate the material into what it would mean for modern audiences. Because the original Ghost in the Shell, just like you can say the original Blade Runner and stuff like that, it was the science fiction of its time. And Blade Runner was what, like the 80s? And I think the original Ghost in the Shell was the 90s as well. I mean, that was all even before smartphones, So it'll be interesting to see how they translate that into where we are now, because that's going to also be a commentary on our current vision of the future. To me, that contrast in itself is going to be an interesting point to look out for. What did we think things were like, or the way things were going to be back in the 80s and 90s compared to where we are now with, drone warfare, smartphones, GPS, and all the things that we kind of take for granted at the moment. So, yeah, I think it'll be good to get some fresh stories. But to me, that doesn't bother me too much because I can't even remember the original story for Ghost in the Shell. So it is going to be kind of fresh. So I don't have that particular gripe. But I think I'm a little bit, not so much jaded, but I've sort of resigned myself to the fact that Hollywood in general is always going to take the safe bet. There's always going to be a remake if they can, just because, especially if they have some numbers for how big the fan base is and how many people are going to go see it, then they're much more comfortable to invest in a movie that's a remake or a reboot or, going to have that nostalgia.
And it'll just work for them.
Yeah, because making original movies is much more risky, They don't know how it's going to do. And unless you've got someone like Christopher Nolan attached or, like a big name, it might be a risk that doesn't pay off.
Yeah.
I mean, so a lot of people pan out Pacific Rim, for example, but I think the year that Pacific Rim came out, it was the only original movie, like blockbuster style movie, that came out that year. Everything else was a reboot or a remake. So, but at the same time, everyone went to watch the other movies, but they didn't really watch Pacific Rim because from a box office point of view, it didn't go gangbusters, as we say, it just did okay. So I think, those are the kinds of things that people need to be aware of and support the kinds of movies you want to see as well. That's like a big thing that I'm sort of thinking about recently is that, we always complain there's not enough diversity, there's not enough new original movies. But when those movies come out, people generally don't go see them. And so that's why they don't get made, because people always go watch the movie that's going to have like that name brand recognition for them. This is my little gripe on Ghost in the Shell. So, visually, so the thing that's not so much concerning me, but the thing that I'm thinking about is like Ghost in the Shell is like highly visual, got all these crazy effects. It looks sumptuous, right?
Yeah.
So does Valerian and the City of 1,000 Planets. So, right? So that trailer just dropped as well. And that just looks like crazy. It looks like they just take it to the next level with the type of special effects and the worlds that they're creating. I'm quite excited over that one. So that's done by the same guy that made The Fifth Element. I forgot his name now.
Oh God, yeah, I forgot it too. I had it a minute ago. It's not Jean-Paul Coutier. He did the clothing for The Fifth Element, and he's a designer. Oh shit.
Jean-Paul Coutier, yeah. I don't know. Anyway, it's a French director, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the Valyrian and the City of a Thousand Planets is actually based on a French comic
yes.
that came out like decades ago. So oh, yeah. it's like, I think it came out in the 70s. Years ago. 70s or 80s. Let's go with that. Because I'm not sure. Because the thing with Valyrian is that a lot of other movies have now copied Valyrian's stylings from the comic.
Yeah.
Right? So the Fifth Element copied like you know, the three-dimensional cities with the with the hovering traffic and all that sort of stuff. A lot of other movies, like I think even Avatar, they took a lot of cues from what was laid out in the Valyrian comic. And now that they're making the Valyrian movie, the sad part is it's going to look derivative of the other movies that copied its original content in the first place. So hopefully it doesn't actually come down to that. But I think what they've shown us so far looks really, really spectacular. So I'm not sure how good the story is and how it'll play out. But from a look and feel point of view, I'm really excited.
Yeah, I hope that the European flavor that'll definitely be in it can mm-hmm. set it apart from all the things that derived from the source material, so to say. And the director is Luc Besson.
Luc Besson, that's it. Yeah. So yeah, and I think he's been waiting for a long time to make this movie, but again was just, you know, waiting for the technology to catch up to a point where he felt that, you know, it can be made.
Yeah.
Because if they tried to do it probably 10 years ago, I think digital effects weren't in a place where a movie like this, because it's going to be like 98% CGI, I'm pretty sure. Like every background and everything is just going to be digitally created. It's not going to be, you know, based in any sort of soundstage. You raise an interesting point, the Europeanness about it. So from a European point of view, what do you think sets like those sorts of stories apart from what an American production would have? And I haven't really given you any time to prepare for that answer. No, so.
it's no problem. But I think the portrayal of the protagonist is different because he gets a lot more leeway with being unlikable, so to say. Because like in the case of Valyrian, he's always trying to seduce his partner. And while that this would be, or I guess it would be much more timid in a US production, it'll be more playful.
Like more, right. So kind of like more Chris Pratt in Jurassic World and in probably Guardians of the Galaxy. Because it's a very similar sort of thing where he's kind of like, I want to say leering, but he's like, you know, he's always kind of like, flirting, I guess, with the with the female character. But you're saying that like it's going to be a lot more overt in a more European type story.
Yeah, I think so. That always sets apart European stories from US stories, that nobody is entirely clear cut or adheres to, or they adhere to a sense to a code. In some ways, how things should be played, but
you mean in American stories?
Yeah, as well as in European stories, but European stories are they feel more real than US stories do in a way, because people, even it sounds stupid, but even assholes are shown to have a good side. They're not mm-hmm. not entirely despicable.
Yeah, I mean, so what, you know, what I'm hearing is that American stories, maybe it's a bad choice of words, tend to be a little bit more black and white in terms of its morality and the behavior of the hero versus the behavior of the villain. Yeah. And it also has that puritanical sensibility, you know, whereas, and we've all seen those late night European shows where there's a lot of nudity and sex scenes and stuff, which you would just not see in American TV. And so, yeah, it will be interesting to see how that plays out, because I think the villains and the heroes in kind of more non-American movies, so I'm not going to say specifically European, but they tend to be more shades of gray. There tends to be, it's not such a black and white morality sometimes. And even with like the heroes on TV, like you see that, like the German detective shows, and I think it's Poirot, the French Was he French? The French detective? Yeah. So, I mean, like, there's a lot of nuance with what's actually going on with those stories compared to in American stories, you tend to have, you know, there tends to be a need to have a more clear morality with good versus evil. I'm interested to see how that plays out in Valerian, because I think, is it a European production or is it an American production?
That's an interesting question.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
But I think it's a European production.
Because it'll be interesting to see how that differentiates then from other types of shows, because you're going to have three movies that are, they're going to have a very similar sort of bent coming out. So you're going to have Ghost in the Shell, which is a Japanese, so it's like an American Japanese type movie. You're going to have Valerian, which will be a European science fiction movie, and Blade Runner 2049 coming out, which, you know, in terms of robots and stuff, which is also going to have, which is be more American, right? So it'll be interesting to see just in terms of the cultural differences between those different movies, right? And how they portray their heroes and villains.
But I think of all of them, Blade Runner 2049 will probably feel more European, because the original Blade Runner movie felt very European to a certain point, of course, but giving the role of the replicants alone feels very uncharacteristic for sci-fi movies of the time. If you compare, say, The Terminator with Blade Runner, but then the replicants in Blade Runner were produced to perform various tasks, while the Terminators were produced to wage war against humankind.
To terminate.
To terminate. To come back.
It'll be interesting. So, I never really, I haven't watched Blade Runner in ages. I mean, that's something that you and I talked about a lot, is that we need to rewatch Blade Runner.
Yeah.
But then which version?
Which version? So, yeah.
I think I've got the director's cut, so I'll just end up watching that. So I got it like ages and ages ago and then just haven't watched it yet. It's just, you know, one of those things like when you buy a book and leave it on your shelf and it's like, well, it's there. I can get to it at any time, but I need to sit down and schedule the time to sit down and watch it, I think. So cool. So that is pretty much the movies that we want to talk about. Anything else on Blade Runner and Valerian that you wanted to pick up before we move on to?
Blade Runner 20. I wonder if we get the mystery solved about the lifespan of the replicants in Blade Runner 2094.
Yes. I think we very well may. So it'll be interesting because, well, I don't want to go into spoiler territory because I half remember some things about Blade Runner, but I actually don't remember much about the ending and the open questions. So let's revisit this question.
Then I won't make the joke I just planned.
You can make it offline. let's revisit this one when I've at least rewatched Blade Runner. And if you want to, we can do a more in-depth review and discussion around what's going to be in 2049 or not, or what we think should be in 2049 or not.
I have no idea. I haven't even bought the Blade Runner 2 book that came out in the 90s.
There's a book?
Oh, man. Yeah, and I regret it because I went for Kevin J. Anderson's Star Wars continuation.
Oh, yeah?
Timothy Thawne, the guy who created Thrawn, not Kevin J. Anderson. But I had the choice between this one and Blade Runner 2, and I went for Star Wars. And I somehow regret it.
But you got Thrawn, right?
Yeah.
So you can't, you can't complain that much. So speaking of Star Wars now, pivot. So Star Wars Rebels, by the way, I haven't gotten into season 2 yet. So, or is it season 3 or season 2? I don't know. Is on now?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I haven't watched season 3 yet. So I've just been waiting so I can binge all the episodes together because it's going to drive me crazy if I have to watch them week by week. But pre-sale tickets have gone on for Rogue One now. Have you got your tickets?
No, because I wanted to buy them and then I realized I have to work. I have 10-hour shifts all day that will last long into the nighttime, and I hope I'll be able to see it by the 19th or the 20th.
Okay.
And I kind of bummed out. But then I realized I have to get a lot of people up to speed because the marketing doesn't convey the fact that it's set between episodes 3 and 4.
The marketing says effectively they're stealing the plans for the Death Star, right? But whether people can put that in context of the whole Star Wars story, I think a lot of fans obviously will, but a lot of people who are like unfamiliar or just kind of know about Star Wars in general won't be able to really put that together.
Yeah, because Susie asked me why Vader is in that movie, why Kylo Ren went full Vader for this movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's so all. Because it's a prequel.
Yeah, it's a confusion between is this a sequel to The Force Awakens or what? Yeah. So it's going to be, I mean, it's an interesting experiment. I think a lot of people are going to go see it just because of the name brand recognition. And I don't know how pre-sale tickets have gone so far. Like, usually they can release some numbers for how well it's been selling. Do you know?
I don't know any numbers, but in the two theaters that are showing the English versions, the first 3 days have been booked out. Wow. All the good places are gone. And I hope I get tickets for the 19th.
Yeah, in Chicago, it's pretty much the same. So all of the primetime sessions, so like, you know, after 5 p.m., all the sessions are effectively booked out. There's some seats, like single seats available here and there. And then, of course, the front row generally sometimes is available. So I'm looking to, I'll probably end up going for a Saturday morning session just because I can't get the evenings anymore. But I'm actually flying out on my Christmas trip on the Saturday afternoon. So I'm going to try to squeeze seeing the movie in the morning and then go home and then finish packing and then fly out that afternoon. Yeah, so it's going to be a bit of a crazy day. So we'll see how it goes. I haven't booked my tickets yet because I'm trying to coordinate with my friends for when we can actually go. And the longer it takes, obviously there's less and less tickets available. So, but again, you know, we can't go on the Thursday or Friday. So in Chicago, it's available. The first sessions are on the Thursday evening in some cinemas. So you can go early, but I can't do Thursday or Friday. So it has to be Saturday morning.
Oh, we have a Wednesday. We have a midnight showing on Wednesday.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah,
man.
I could have gotten tickets. Then I realized I have to work.
Darn. So lucky Austrians. I have avoided the last couple trailers for The Force Awakens, Rogue One. I mean, at this stage, I just don't want to see any. I'm in going into media blackout for Rogue One. I just want to watch the movie at this stage. I don't want to waste my time with the trailers and like get oversaturated with what it's going to be like and the visuals. So, yeah, I'm just trying to avoid everything so I can go in and kind of like experience it without too much of baggage, which I had for the first X-Men movie. So when that movie came out, you know, I just mentioned before, I was a massive X-Men fan. I'd watched the trailer so many times because I was so excited that the X-Men movie was coming out. And then when I watched the X-Men movie, every time they said a piece of dialogue or a scene from the trailer, it would jar me out of the movie. It just made the whole experience really bad because I'm like, oh, that was in the trailer. And that was in the trailer. And that was in the trailer. That I didn't actually enjoy the movie because I constantly kept on getting pulled out by the stuff that was in the trailer. So since then, I've avoided watching the trailers too many times. And then usually for about like 3 or 4 weeks before the movie comes out to actually stop watching all the trailers. So that's where I'm at with Star Wars right now.
There's not so much new material in the trailers, just a few appetizers to get you in the mood. But nothing substantial. Yeah. But the book is neat. The prequel book that came out recently, it deals with Mads Mikkelsen's character, Galen Erso, Jyn Erso's father, and his connection to the story of Rogue One. It's a very fine read, very serious read, because it's set in the Clone Wars and gives a nice contrast to the rather colorful serialization that is the animated show. And here's the gritty reality behind it. Planets in military lockdown mode and the horrors of war.
Is that available as a book, or like how do you get that?
It's a book. It's called Catalyst.
So it's not a comic, right?
No, it's not a comic.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a neat read. It's well written.
Oh, cool. Is it long?
No, it's like 300 pages.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not too bad. Yeah, interesting. So that's called Catalyst. Do you know who the author is? Or is we can put the link in the at the bottom.
I put a link in the show notes.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah, no, I wasn't aware of that one, so I'll have to look it up as well. If I don't end up watching Star Wars, I can only watch it in the new year, which will just be a painful wait. So I'll probably read the book to get me past it.
You have to disconnect the internet.
Yeah. God. Yeah, because I mean, the key thing for me is I don't want spoilers, right? I just want to experience, even though I know how it's going to end, but it's all about how it happened. So that's the big thing to look forward to. So I guess our next show will only be after all of that, right?
Yeah, I guess. all the Christmas shenanigans have to be dealt with before we can do that.
Yeah. So we just finished Thanksgiving here in America, and it was just a week effectively of eating. So I had Thanksgiving dinner at two different friends' places, so across two different days, and I was just so stuffed. They also gave me enough leftovers to last me a week. So, you know, it's just, there's just so much of food involved. And then Christmas is coming up as well, which would also be a whole lot of more of eating and festive activities. But it's one of my favorite times of year, so I'm excited.
Yeah, it's nice. And the nieces declared that they are not believing in Santa Claus anymore. They've looked through the charade. Yeah. And now we're planning to incorporate them into the planning and into the setup of the whole thing. We're not an overly Christian family, so we try and use Christmas as a, you know, just as a means to come together.
Yeah.
In this rather warm setting that the marketing set up for the world. And
yeah.
Yeah, because we come together almost every weekend, and I talk to my parents almost on a daily basis, so we don't need this holiday to come together.
To be close,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, and it'll be interesting.
Sorry. What's good about it? I think it's a nice excuse, and like you said, the marketing and the idealism of the warm setting with the fireplace and the tree and the decorations, it adds a level of it adds a level of coziness, I think, to the whole thing. So, yeah, I think it's good every now and again to do something special, and this just gives you an excuse to do something special. So,
yeah,
because otherwise you tend to like even if you meet every week and if you talk every day, you can tend to take the relationships for granted. And so this is a good time to sort of say, you know, let's actually do something special to celebrate these relationships, which is good.
And that's how we try to utilize Christmas.
Yeah, cool. So yeah, so I think, you know, we're all going to have a lot of fun going forward. So this will be probably our last episode until 2017, right?
Yeah.
So we kind of did 9.5, didn't we?
nine and a half episodes. Yeah, we did 10 Season episodes. One. It's amazing.
Yeah. Well, I only said half because we did do like a quick round. We had like a half an hour episode at one point. So that's, I'm counting that as a half. But you know. It's 10 overall.
It's 10. We got individual together 10 times. And we worked through a lot of obstacles. And I'm really, now that you mentioned, I'm really proud of us.
Man, technical issues. We had echo issues. We had dishwashers flooding the apartment. It was crazy.
Yeah. And we came through.
Yeah. So backstory there is that halfway through one of our recordings, Martin's dishwasher decided to flood his apartment. We had to break. I don't think we met. Was that last time?
It was the last time. It was the Doctor Strange episode. Amazing.
Crazy stuff. But we did well. So next year, we do want to continue doing this. I think there's going to be another whole slate of movies coming out next year. But we also wanted to see how we can mix things up and probably take a different type of approach. So one of the things we messed around with was maybe watching some older movies and then reviewing those. Things like Blade Runner and even, you know, going through the history of science fiction cinema, maybe things like Metropolis, and I don't know how far back you want to go.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
Yeah, so, you know, just one to sort of expand our perspectives and horizons and exposure to all these different things. and then share those thoughts with the audience. With you.
The audience, yeah.
So if you have any thoughts and ideas for how we can improve or sort of expand the show next year, let us know, and then we'll get right on that.
Should we do Sardos or shouldn't we? The Sean Connery science fiction thing that he did with the, I think with the Highlander director, which is
really
it's crazy. I've seen it years ago when I was like 9 or 10 years old. Definitely not the right age to watch this.
Yeah. Sorry, we're at the end of the show pretty much now, and my heating has just kicked in. If you can hear
that's
that.
The heating. Nice.
That's the heating. It's super loud. Like, there's a thing, I don't know, in America where when your heating or air conditioning turns on, it has to sound like a jet engine.
Yeah, so you know that it's going to be warm while.
So you know it's on. Yeah, so anyway, so that's that noise.
It's a cozy sound.
Yeah, you know, makes me feel warm. It makes me feel warm because it didn't snow, but it may snow this afternoon here in Chicago. So I'm waiting for that. It'll be the first snow of the season.
You're preparing.
It'll be fun. I'm preparing. I'm like excited. I have not heard of the Sean Connery thing. So yeah.
Oh God, look it up. It's on the list you sent me. It's on the honorary mentions. And he wears a wedding dress somewhere. Yeah. It's amazing. It's an amazing movie. Oh God.
All right. This I've got to see. So that's our show, everyone. Thanks for hanging around.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for making this a fun experience for us during season one. And we look forward to season two. And until then, happy holidays. Merry Christmas.
Happy holidays. Merry Christmas.
And happy new year.
Yeah, happy new year. 2017. Hopefully better than 2016.
2016 has been a bitch of a year. So
it's
I'm hoping
not over yet.
It's a lot better. I know, we got a couple more weeks, but...
Still three weeks to go.
2016. So did you see the thing with Stephen Colbert? One of the talk shows.
Oliver. John Oliver?
It was John Oliver. Yeah, that's it.
Fuck you, 2016. Yep.
That's my sentiment exactly. So yeah. Fuck you, 2016. We'll see you in 2017.
Until then.
All right, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You're healthy. I'm an old soul trapped in a in a strange body.
I'm random. So I was doing the gym the other day.
Yeah.
And like, I'm not that I'm lifting like such massive amounts of weight or anything like that, but when you work out, when you're lifting, you're working not just your muscles, but you're also working your nervous system, right?
Yeah.
Like your brain's connection through your nervous system to your muscles and stuff. I've got some wire crossed somewhere. which kicked in when I was doing like a heavy weight and because I was just tired as well. My connection to my right quad, to my right thigh, right? Yeah. When I'm in the squat. Has somehow crossed wires with my pain receptor or my feeling, my sensory, like my feeling nerves. Because when I'm doing the squat, when I'm pushing up, this is going to sound horrible, but it's actually not that bad. It feels like my skin is separating from my legs, like I'm being flayed.
Mm-hmm.
Is what it feels like. But it's weird. It only happens when I'm in the movement. And when it's a heavy weight, but then when I touch it after that, it feels numb. Like I can't feel it at all. So somehow, like it's not a muscle thing because it's only on the surface. So I can feel it just only on the skin, but it feels like it's just weird because it doesn't hurt. It's not like pain. It's just a sensation. You know what I mean? So it's scary. It's scary if it's not painful.